Having 7 billion people on the planet and having a lot of those people have children puts lots of pressures on the planet itself. So you see many strategies used to protect the environment, including payments for environmental services. PES, as the shorthand goes, is what it sounds like. People get paid not to cut down trees or to otherwise protect land. And a recent study shows the value of PES in parts of Mexico. The lead author of the study is an Oregon State University professor. Jennifer Alex Garcia is professor and head of the Department of Applied Economics at OSU and our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Jeffrey.
So the overall concept of PES, can you flesh it out a little more for us, help us get familiar with it?
I think it's a good place to start is to think about what ecosystem services actually are. So when we think about forests, the forests provide some sort of value in terms of what you might extract from them, for example. But they also provide some value just in being there. For example, they sequester carbon. They might help the watershed function better. In some places, they might be a warehouse for biodiversity. And these are the sort of things that we refer to as services of the ecosystem. The concept of payment for ecosystem services is that there is a mismatch between the value that a landowner gets from having a forest or some other type of valuable land use versus what society gets. So the social value of these lands, that is these carbon services, might be greater than what the private value of the land is to the landowner. PES tries to correct this. It's an incentive-based policy where the idea is to compensate landowners for their success in maintaining or enhancing the delivery of ecosystem services.
Okay. I want to point out, too, that the E can stand for either ecosystem or environmental, it seems like. It seems like they're used interchangeably. But either way, you're talking about things like getting shade from trees or having trees sequester carbon.
Correct.
All right. So who does the paying then in most PES systems then? I mean, where does the reserve of money come from to be able to pay people to do things like not cut their trees?
Well, in the United States, we have quite a few large payments for ecosystem services programs that operate through the USDA and through the Forest Service. And in those cases, the government is paying that money. So examples of this are the Conservation Reserve Program in the United States that pays farmers to either conserve or enhance the natural cover of retired agricultural lands. The Forest Service also pays people to manage their forests in more environmentally friendly ways.
And
those
lands
kind
that
of government... Oh, I'm sorry.
These are lands that adjoin the Forest Service, for example?
These are private lands that people enroll in federally supported programs. Mm. Those types of programs in the U.S. account for about 30% of the payments for ecosystem services. There are then a huge network of private ecosystem service payments that go on through institutions like the Nature Conservancy, which pays people for conservation easements, or independent efforts where certain private industries will pay for the conservation of watersheds that are valuable to downstream users. For example, the city of New York pays farmers in upstate New York to reduce pesticide use so that the water that flows into New York City is of higher quality.
Ah, okay. So this is, you know, it sounds like a real 21st century thing, PES, payment for environmental or ecosystem services, but it's really been going on for a long time now from the sounds of it.
Yeah, I think the example that I gave from New York started in the late 70s. The big example in the United States, which is the Conservation Reserve Program, was signed into law in 1985.
Okay, so it's been around a while then. Is there some controversy then, Jennifer Alex Garcia, attached to the practice of payment for ecosystem services, environmental services?
I think some of the controversy that has arisen has happened in response to the proliferation of PES schemes in developing countries. So Mexico was one of the first countries to have such a payment scheme. Other examples are in Costa Rica, China, Ecuador, and Vietnam. And as these payment schemes began to roll out, conservationists began to worry that paying people to engage in environmental protection might actually undermine their willingness to protect things for free. And they also worried that it might undermine other voluntary contributions of time and effort that are important in developing countries in a way that is a little bit different than here. So, for example, in Mexico, voluntary contributions of time are required to build schools and roads in rural areas.
Mm-hmm. Of everybody?
They're required as a matching, part of matching schemes in mm-hmm. order to increase, this is strictly rural areas,
sure.
but in order to increase infrastructure in these kind of remote places. And so people who are thinking about PES before it really got off the ground were very worried that monetizing this sort of voluntary activity might undermine its provision in a variety of ways.
Jennifer Alex Garcia, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the head of the Department of Applied Economics at Oregon State University. She's also the lead author of a study called Payments for Environmental Services, Supported Social Capital While Increasing Land Management. It's a case from Mexico that we're going to talk about in just a moment. You can join us to talk conceptually about payment for environmental services, payment for ecosystem services, your choice of what you want to do with that E, but we'll get into a discussion about the validity of it all and how it works. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. I can imagine this can, Jennifer, get fairly expensive if the value of the commodity not extracted rises, for example, and it becomes much more valuable to take the trees out rather than leave them standing there.
You're exactly right. Your intuition that you need to compensate people for the use they might have had for the land is spot on. And it is true that as prices change in international markets or in national markets, the incentive to convert some of this land rises, and you do have to pay people more money.
So you mentioned focusing on Mexico, which is what happened in the research that got published earlier this month. What specifically did you go looking for there?
This study was a follow-up study to address the question of whether or not these monetary payments undermined social activities in communities. My co-author and I on this study, Catherine Sims from Amherst College, had previously shown that the program is effective in its primary goal of reducing land cover loss. So we were really interested in looking at this issue of whether or not these payments make communities worse off by making them not want to participate in other important voluntary activities. But in fact, what we found was that this wasn't the case. There's some evidence from our work that the program actually results in higher levels of what we are referring to as social capital, which you can think of as involvement in town meetings, the ability to resolve conflict, community investment, and that sort of thing.
So the social capital is greater if there's more community engagement?
Well, that could be one mechanism through which the program works. So you pay the communities to manage the forest, and in the process of this, they have to work together in order to do things like install fire breaks, patrol the forest against illegal activity and against the intrusion of fire, and sort of group activities. We find that their participation in land cover management activities actually increases by 50% when they receive the payments. And importantly, we also find that they're increasing work in the forest, but they're not decreasing their work in other areas of the community. They still participate in the same way in road construction and school maintenance and those sorts of activities.
And I have neglected to ask up to this point, was this public forest, private forest?
Our study focuses on a kind of unusual feature of the Mexican landscape, which are land tenure systems that are called agrarian communities. So we don't have this in the United States. Mexico has these agrarian communities, which are places where people manage a large tract of land as a commons, so they have to vote on the management activities that take place there. About 45% of the Mexican forest is found in these kinds of places.
45%?
Yes.
Wow, that is significant.
Yeah, these are an outcome from the Mexican Revolution. So Mexico began a big land reform where they redistributed large tracts of what was the hacienda system to the workers of those haciendas, and that's where a lot of these agrarian communities originally came from.
And they're called ejidos or comunidades?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, so do people own a share of it, or is it just they get to live there in return for their work? Or, I mean, what's the usual equation for the individual family?
It varies from place to place. So in a typical ejido, the people who are working the land now are the children of the people who were originally allocated the land through the agrarian reform. The number of people who are members of the ejido is fixed over time. People can only pass down their rights to one person. They're generally composed of a common property area where people have to vote on what happens, and then individual agricultural parcels where people have more rights to do what they want.
So do the ejidos and comunidades appear in more environmentally sensitive areas, or are they just sort of scattered around? I'm just trying to figure out if fairly valuable lands were protected, or have they become valuable lands because of the system?
Over half the land of Mexico is in ejido, so you have a wide variety of different land types there. You have some very valuable land and some land which is not productive at all. I think when you compare it to the private landholding system, you would find that there's more forests conserved in these rural communities, mostly because they're poorer, and so they don't have the means to deforest on large scale, as has happened in many other places.
I was going to ask about the difference then. I mean, when you got one owner you're dealing with, you've got to convince that person. But it seems like when you've got a whole community you're dealing with, the calculus socially would be very different.
Yeah, it is indeed very different. but the communities do vote to participate in this program and actually in a variety of programs that the Mexican government provides. They have an internal governance structure where you have a president who's elected, a secretary, and a sort of rule, someone who supervises the rules. And sometimes they have lots of committees. So they have a structure through which to make these sorts of decisions, but it is sometimes hard to organize.
We're talking to Jennifer Alex Garcia here on the Jefferson Exchange about systems in which there is money received for ecosystems staying intact. That's payments for environmental services or payment for ecosystem services, PES, as it's getting known around the globe. And there is some controversy attached to it. Jennifer and her team discovered some success in Mexico with PES, as we're hearing. You can join the conversation on the exchange at 800-838-3760. Your thoughts on PES generally and its applications, perhaps some you've seen in the United States. 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So without getting too far into the weeds of regression discontinuity, what did you measure, Jennifer?
Well, we went into these communities and we interviewed people. And we measured what sort of land use activities they engaged in. And we also asked them about things like whether they participated in community assemblies, if they engaged in the community work days, which are part of being in an agrarian system like the ejido system. When we calculated five indices that aggregated up this information about how people are cooperating together. And then in order to figure out if the program had an impact on these activities, we were making comparisons between places where people benefited from the program compared to places which almost benefited because they applied, but they didn't quite make it. So the way that the Mexican government allocates payments within this program is that every property gets assigned a point score, which is based upon the ecological quality of the land and a variety of social indicators. So you have a number assigned to each place. And within each state, the government begins allocating budget to the places that have the highest score, and it allocates that money until they run out. And we were making comparisons between the people who just missed that cutoff and the people who just made it, with the idea that the difference between those people is pretty small, and any changes that you see can be attributed to the impact of the program.
And was this over the course of several years or just 1 year, or how did you measure that?
We interviewed people who were involved in the program for the years between 2011 and 2014, but we only measured their outcomes at one point in time, that is in 2016 when we went to do the surveys.
Mm-hmm. The reason I ask is because I'm just curious to know if some of the people who just missed getting the allocation because of the points might have worked harder to get it the next year, if you had any measurement like that.
Yeah, that's an interesting question. And the reviewers of the paper did also ask us that question. We tried to look at whether people who were rejected in the years that we examined had different behavior when they had previously applied. So we have a lot of information on who applies to this program because we were collaborating with the Mexican Forest Service, so they gave us all the program information. And we were able to identify places that had applied multiple times. And we did try to look at the differences between those people who kept trying and trying and places that only tried once. And we didn't see an impact there. So we worked under the assumption that just applying for the program doesn't make you change your behavior. It's actually participating that does that.
Ah, okay. So making the cut and getting in is where the differences get made.
Correct.
So land cover did increase, you say, in the research.
Well, we find this is the third time that we've analyzed this program, and the results that we found in our analysis for these cohorts are similar to what we found in the past, which is that the program seems to reduce land cover loss. So we're looking at forests, but also at other ecosystems like dryland ecosystems, because the government is very concerned with the biodiversity provided by those types of land use. And we find that the program reduces the loss from between 25% to 50%. So it's not that people are planting new land cover. It's actually that they're just not removing it.
That was a key distinction I wanted to get to. So it's not so much that forest cover is really increasing so much as it's just not decreasing as fast or not decreasing at all?
It's not decreasing as fast.
Okay. But land cover is still somewhat getting lost over time?
Well, actually, overall, over the past 10 years, Mexico's deforestation rate has decreased. But it is still positive, so people are still deforesting, which means that there is a place for a program like this.
I noticed a burp in here caused by a change in government policy in 2013. What happened there?
In 2013, the government decided that they wanted to make sure that people were using the resources from the program to reinvest in the forest itself. So they mandated that people spend the money in a particular way. They wanted that money to go directly back into forest management, either via wages paid to people to work in the forest or investment in materials used for management. Prior to 2013, they had lower requirements for that, so they didn't have mandatory activities. People could spend the money how they wanted. So that was a bit of an adjustment in the program rules.
Jennifer Alex Garcia, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, professor and head of the Department of Applied Economics at Oregon State University. She's the lead author with Catherine Sims of a piece in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences dated June 14th called Payments for Environmental Services Supported Social Capital While Increasing Land Management. You can join us on the exchange as we talk about payments for ecosystem services. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So, Jennifer, what are the limits in extrapolating what you found in Mexico to an entire country or to all countries?
Well, There are always difficulties in trying to apply what you learn in one place to what you apply or what you might do in another place. I think the general concept of payments for ecosystem services has been shown to work in a variety of settings, and we know that because we've seen studies coming out of Costa Rica. We know that the Conservation Reserve Program in the U.S. works pretty well, and we have recent evidence from Uganda that shows that these programs are effective. I think the details of how they work in different places has to be specific to where you are, because the activities that drive land use change vary from place to place.
They do indeed, and I guess part of the argument, and there is apparently an ongoing debate about PES and its value, is that the sense of, for lack of a better term, extortion. You know, you pay me or I'll cut these trees down. Does it ever get to that point?
Well, a good program design tries to avoid that. It's a great question, though. It sort of goes back to what we think about all sorts of policies that give people benefits. You don't want people to receive a benefit based upon some bad behavior that they engaged in. So one way to avoid that in the context that we're thinking about is to try to target payments towards places that you think have a high probability of having deforestation, but you don't base that assessment upon what people in that specific place did. You base it on the fact that you know that deforestation happens where people are closer to cities and they have more productive land. And those are things that people can't change. Your soil has pretty much, I mean, you can change it to some extent, but good soil is good soil, and land close to cities is land close to cities, and those are the places where deforestation risk is higher.
As you look around the planet, and particularly at Mexico, which got the focus of this recent study, I mean, is there a chance that the changes in political circumstances, a party in, a party out of power, that sort of thing, could change the PES payment system or wipe it out altogether?
Do you mean within Mexico or?
Well, anywhere, really, but Mexico was the place you studied, so that's the example at hand.
Well, the Mexican program has lasted through three administrations, which I think is heartening. The way that the program is structured there, when a village is allocated a payment, enough money is set aside for them to maintain that payment for 5 years. So at a minimum, even if a new administration decides to change the policy, there's enough funding there to pay the people who are currently enrolled. Mm-hmm. But there is always a political risk that a government might find a policy unappealing and bring it to an end.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on how things go with payments for ecosystem services, payments for environmental services, PES, here and around the globe. Something to certainly consider in this one. This research, again, is titled Payments for Environmental Services Supported Social Capital While Increasing Land Management. Jennifer Alex Garcia at Oregon State University, the lead author with Catherine Sims at Amherst College, also includes Victor Orozco Olvera, Laura Costica, Jorge David Fernandez Medina, and Sofia Romo Monroy. Jennifer Alex Garcia, thanks so much for taking the time to explain the research to us here on The Exchange today.
Thanks very much for having me.